this past Thursday, Christina and I celebrated, yes, that's us, we celebrated the 27th anniversary of the day we started dating. So that's 27 years ago. You know you're getting old when all the photos you can find of yourself when you were younger are like old-timey looking photos with scratches in them and stuff. But 27 years of dating. And when we were dating, before we ever even started to say the M word and talk about marriage, we used to use like a code word for it. We used to talk about someday. You know, someday we would... No, we were both thinking of someday. We talk about how, you know, we'd build a life together and what that life might look like and how we'd want to live and what we'd want to be like and what we'd want to do. And we talk about it as someday. And there in the infancy of our relationship, dreaming and imagining this day that where we'd be closer and we'd have deeper intimacy with each other and love each other, that we looked forward to that day. And we just talked about it as someday. It's out there. And the path from those dating days to someday, it was filled with a lot of wonderful moments and wonderful times, but also it was filled with a lot of difficult and even painful ones sometimes. I'll speak for me. I had a lot to learn about relationship, and because there are rules that guide relationships. Amen? I'm not arbitrary rules that someone created, like, you know, on February 14th, you have to buy chocolate and flowers. Not arbitrary rules like that, but the kind of rules you discover as you're figuring out how something works. For instance, take the way a baby learns to walk. You know, they have to learn the rules of walking, right? And at first, they try to break those rules by not touching the ground like it's hot lava. And then they, you know, fall a lot. We all go through this process of learning the rules of walking before we finally, eventually, learn, oh, I got to put one foot in front of the other. I can't be like, doing that stuff. You learn, it's the rules of walking. It's what has to happen in order to walk. It's those kinds of rules that govern relationships. And through a lot of falling, stumbling, suffering, Christina and I, we learned better and better how to love each other. We suffered through misunderstandings and mistakes and arguments and confusion and temptations, and they all became lessons that deepened and improved our love. They taught us to obey the rules of relationship. And we're still learning, because that's what life is, isn't it? Life is about learning, always learning. It's a process of learning and growing through struggle. This life is for learning and growing. You know, the big question of life, why are we here? What are we here for? What should we be doing? What's the purpose? I'll give you the answer. Simple, right? Here it is. To learn and to grow. To learn what and grow into what? To learn to be like God. To learn to be godly. To grow into a son or a daughter of our Creator. That's what life is about. That's why we are here. To learn and grow, to become like Jesus. Because there's a someday out there. There's a someday waiting out there that God talks about, that God longs for. A someday that he wants to share with us. The same way Christina and I used to talk about someday we'd be, you know, married and you'd have this, the relationship would be, you know, all perfect and everything. Well, God has this real someday out there for us when we will have this relationship with him that is complete and mature and unencumbered by our sin and our brokenness and all the suffering and misery that comes with it. In that life, we experience true rest, where we are able to enjoy creation and relationship without the dark cloud of entropy hanging over our heads. You know what that is? That sense that as good as things are and as beautiful as they are, they're bound to fall apart at some point. It's the way some of you feel today, waiting for the Patriot game. You're like, this has been amazing, the Patriots. It's 16 years of dominance. Please let it not come to an end. But we know every good thing comes to an end. But please, Lord, let it not be today. That feeling that hangs over your head, that anything good is going to have to end. No more of that. Because when we enter God's rest, the someday he has for us, it will be perfect. And we'll be able to enjoy him and enjoy this creation, his creation, without fear of decay. But this day, this life, is for growing. The life of someday, that's for resting and discovering this rest God's looking forward to for us. But until then, this day, we keep striving and driving and growing. This morning, I want to try and unpack a portion of scripture from the book of Hebrews that it might be a little difficult. In fact, the author of Hebrews stops partway through this passage and starts to talk about how he's feeding us steak instead of milk, and steak is harder to chew and get down. And then he kind of drops this challenge on his readers and on us and says, look, are you milk drinkers or meat eaters? When it comes to spiritual truth, when it comes to knowing God, when it comes to your faith, are you a meat eater or a milk drinker? It's okay to be a milk drinker when you're a baby, but when your faith is young. But as you mature and get older, it's time to put the bottle down and pick up the steak and chew on solid food. So let's chew on this morning, but let me give you a little context. You can turn there to Hebrews chapter 4. Let me give you a little context for the passage to help us kind of ease into it, because it's going to give us a picture to hold on to that'll help us continue to drive in this life, where this life, which is about growing, not resting. So Hebrews starts with a story, if you've been around church much, you're very familiar with, this meaty idea that God rescued Israel from Egypt way back in the day and led them through the wilderness to the promised land where they were looking forward to getting, where they could set up their kingdom and rest. No more fighting and slugging through all these other enemy armies. They would set up their kingdom and rest. That's what they were looking forward to. But a lot of people didn't make it to the promised land because their hearts were hard and they refused to obey God. And there's this first simple truth that Hebrews points out. If you are hard-hearted, you don't enter God's rest. Your muscles are like sponges. Think of it. Think of your muscles right now. Just try and feel some of your muscles. You've got a couple of them. Your muscles are like sponges, and the more we sit and the more we don't move, they get like a sponge that you leave on the side of your sink, and it gets drier and drier. And what happens as a sponge gets drier? It gets harder. And what happens if you try to suddenly, you know, grab that sponge and squeeze it? It eventually starts to like crumble and rip and tear so easy. But if it's wet, then it's strong and it doesn't rip, it doesn't tear. It can bend and it can move and it's healthy. And your muscles are the same way. The more we sit and the more we don't move, the more they get hard and dry. And then when you do get up, it's like, oh my goodness, I can't move and you can't do the things you want to do. The same thing happens with our soul, our spirit, our heart. When we don't exercise it through exercising faith in relationship with God, in prayer, in sharing the gospel, in fasting, in all these different spiritual disciplines that we talk about, then our spiritual heart gets hard and dry. And when our heart is hard, we don't obey God. We don't even think to obey God. We end up just trying to do our own thing, and we get torn apart by life. If your heart is hard, you don't enter into God's rest. So there is this thing, though, that God has for us, this place he wants us to go, that God has for us. And Hebrews goes on from there. Okay, if you're hard-hearted, you don't get to that place. It goes on the quote from King David, a psalm he wrote, and this is really important. You got to keep this in your head here. This is a psalm that King David wrote hundreds of years after Israel got into the promised land where they could set up their kingdom and rest from all the fighting, right? So this is hundreds of years after they got into that kingdom. David writes this psalm about how God has this day out there still where he has this rest for them to get to. And that means that God has always had something for us that was way beyond the rest that we read about in the Old Testament, way beyond a place in the Middle East. It is this place God has for us, a final destination, this someday destination that those who trust and obey God will enter. And that's where we step into Hebrews chapter 4, verses 1 through 11. They're in your bulletin. They're on the screen. If you've got our app, you can just open that up and follow along and take notes there as well. But it says, Hebrews 4, starting in verse 1. Therefore, since the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us be careful that none of you be found to have fallen short of it. We have also had the good news proclaimed to us, just like the people in olden days did, but the message they heard was of no value to them because they didn't share in the faith of those who obeyed. Now, we who believed enter that rest. Just as God said, I declared on an oath in my anger, the ones who don't believe, they shall never enter my rest. So pause there. I want to make sure we're getting this. The rest God's talking about is not some place in the Middle East with buildings and temples and castles and fortifications. He's talking about something much bigger. He's talking about his rest. Think about this. What is God's rest? What does that remind you of? God's rest. When have you heard God and rest together? Creation story? Day 7? Genesis 2:2, by the seventh day, God had finished his work of establishing his kingdom and the work he had been doing, and so on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. God's talking about day 7 rest. The story of creation is about how God brought order out of chaos, about how God brought everything and gave it function and spoke it into being and brought order out of chaos. And so day 1 through 6 are all about doing that, are all about fighting back the chaos and making order of things and giving them function and beauty. And then day 7 is about rest, about God having set everything in order and everything being good, moving from this fighting back to this ruling and reigning and enjoying the beauty of creation. God has already entered that seventh day rest, that day 7 rest, but we never entered it because of sin, because of our own unbelief and disobedience. We got stuck here in this day 1 through 6 life, still held back, still held out because our sin kept us from this day 7 rest that God, though, is looking forward to giving us. And that's what Hebrews is talking about as it picks up the second part of verse 3. And yet his works have been finished since the creation of the world. For somewhere it said that on the seventh day, God rested from all his works, right? And again, but he's saying now, they will never enter my rest. So God entered his rest, but still that rest hasn't happened because he's saying these people who disobey won't enter his rest, but there's a rest out there. And by the way God talks about it, he makes it clear that that rest has nothing to do with a patch of dirt on this planet the way it is now, that we aren't there yet, and those who have hard hearts and don't believe will never be there. But this someday God has for us is a day when you and I will enjoy our Creator and creation with him with no decay, no falling apart, no end to life. Someday is day 7. But we haven't caught up yet. We're still working our way through chaos, and that's why this life is for growing, not resting. That's why this life is for growing and not sitting back and relaxing. If we stop and rest here, we will never get to the rest that our souls crave. And so he goes on, therefore, since it still remains for some to enter that rest, and since those who formerly had the good news proclaimed didn't go in because of disobedience, God set another certain day, calling it today. And this he did when he spoke through David in that psalm and said, today, if you'll hear his voice, don't harden your hearts. Enter in. He said, then points out, if Joshua, who led them into the promised land, if he didn't give him rest, God would have said it if that was the rest, but he didn't. God said, there's still a rest ahead for us. There is a someday. Day 7 is still out there. There remains then, verse 9, a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest so that no one will perish by following the example of disobedience. This life is not for resting, it's for growing. God, I pray you'd help us to digest the meat of your word today in your name. Amen. I'm looking forward to the spring, and heading up to Maine, where Christina and I love to go. I talk about it all the time, because there's a mountain there that I want to climb. It's called Bald Mountain. So this mountain and I are beginning to share things in common. Some of you are quick. And so Christina and I hiked it 15, 20 years ago, and it was great and wonderful. We got to the top, and we could see for miles and miles and miles of lakes and mountains, and we could see the sun going down. To be up that high and look out over God's creation is just beautiful. But that was 15, 20 years ago. I haven't been to the top since because I got lazy and flabby and out of shape. And so we tried to go. We tried to go a couple years ago, and we were halfway up, and I promise you, I thought I was having a heart attack. But I played it off because I don't want to look like a wimp in front of my wife. So we found this place halfway up the mountain where, it juts out and there's some rocks and you can get a little bit of a view. But there you could see there's still trees there. So I got my dog to want to go there. I'm like, oh, well, he wants to go here. And then, oh, he wants to rest. He's tired. And, oh, look, I think his paw is hurt. Maybe we should eat lunch. And that's as far as we got. And it was beautiful, and it was nice, but that was it. That was as far as we could go because I settled. I settled for a rest that was halfway because I wasn't willing to press on and suffer through that trail all the way. And I couldn't. It was too difficult because I'd spent too much time sitting and growing flabby, and so I missed out. Not only that, I made Christina miss out. We impact each other. When we stop growing and don't keep pushing through, we impact the people around us. We hold each other back. I'm tired of that. Aren't you? I'm tired of missing out on things because I'm either physically or spiritually too flabby to grow through what's coming my way. I don't want to miss out on day 7. I don't want to settle for a rest that's halfway up the mountain with, staring at the backs of trees. That's not what I want to settle for. I want to get to what God has for me and wrap my hands around this idea and wrap my mind and my heart around this idea that this life is for growing, not resting. Because this life's not for resting. How many of you have ever fallen asleep driving? Raise your hand. Be honest. Come on. All right. Look at who that is and make sure you leave before them today. Christina's cousin has fallen asleep more than once driving, and the worst time, he and his brother were driving, and he fell asleep, and he woke up, the mile marker signs, those little metal spikes with the little numbers on them on the side of the road? He woke up, ba-doom, ba-doom, running them over, and then eventually just kind of rolled the car over into a ditch. They were both, thank God, fine. But the cars are for driving, not sleeping, right? This life is for driving heavenward, not falling asleep at the wheel and crashing. My dog is very smart, but also extremely stupid. I should say it more fairly. Oftentimes, instinct takes over his ability to reason, which he doesn't have. We'll be walking, and many times we'll be crossing a major street, cars coming and going, and we're doing fine, and right in the middle of the street, he smells something and wants to stop in the middle of traffic and sniff because there was something interesting that got his attention. There have been times when he was tired and decided, this is where I'm going to lay down. But roads are not for stopping and sniffing or for lying down. They are for moving, for going. Otherwise, what happens? You get flattened. This life is not for resting. This life is for growing. And sometimes I think that we are like vampires hanging upside down in a room of mirrors. Put that picture in your head. We've got everything backwards and upside down, and we can't see ourselves to know how backwards and upside down we are. We pour so much energy into making life comfortable for ourselves, and we've done an amazing job. I mean, come on, just picture your sofa at home right now. Last night, how many of you had heat as you were sleeping so it wasn't that cold? Isn't that nice and wonderful to have a button you push and heat comes on? Or you have this box in your kitchen that you open and there's food and it stays fresh for days and days. That's amazing. Are you taking that for granted? How much of the world doesn't even have that? Think of all the different ways we have comfort. For Christmas, I got that Amazon Alexa Echo thing, and I got some of the lights that I can control with it. And so I literally have a God complex now. I walk into my house, living room on, boom, the lights come on. Bedroom off, boom, the lights go off. You know, play this music, and it's, I mean, come on. What more could we want? What could day seven possibly have for us compared to all these comforts that we have accumulated and work so hard to accumulate for ourselves? We forget that God has a rest for us that is miles higher and better than any of these cheap things we're settling for. These aren't even halfway up the mountain. This rest that we create for ourselves, it makes us spiritually flabby, and it makes us forget or choose not to think about the incredible promises of God and this rest that he has if we would just grow through the things that we encounter and suffer in this life instead of running and trying to escape any type of difficulty that comes our way. Spiritually, we're like those little kids doing the wooden spoon dance that I used to do, you know, right? The mom chasing you with the spoon. We're just doing everything we can to get away from any kind of trouble. And when it comes, we're like, God, why do you hate me? Or we run away and we isolate ourselves. Instead of seeing it as this is what this life is about, I am going to use this to grow. God's going to use this to grow me, to become more like him. I don't need rest right now. There's a rest I'm working for that is so much better on the other side. I just need to keep pushing by his strength. We've got it upside down. We've got it upside down. We're turning this life into a time for resting and figuring, oh, I'll grow once they plant me in the ground. Not how it works. But we've also got it backwards. Because ironically, God has given us a gift called the Sabbath. He's given us this gift, this way, this pace of life where he says, yeah, work 6 days, but take one day and taste my rest. Taste day seven. We're not there yet, but take one day and taste this and see how beautiful what I have for you. Taste this by enjoying me, enjoying what I've made for you, enjoying the relationships I've put in your life. Take one day, and what do we do with this one day? We fill it with obligations and with work and responsibilities and busyness because we've got it backwards too. And the net effect of all this, we think that if we fill every day with busyness, that'll enable us to have more. You know, to have more to make this life feel more useful. If I just work a few more hours, I'll get a little bit more in my check. I can buy a better sofa, a bigger TV, a nicer car, and then I'll be more comfortable. Life will be more restful for me. No, it won't. We've got it upside down and backwards, and we can't even see. Because that's the end result of all this. We don't see God's rest anymore. We forget. There's a day seven out there waiting for us. And we forget it's there and we can't see it because all we can see is our busyness and our desperateness to just get back to that sofa, get back to that bed, get back to that pillow, get back to whatever it is that we take rest in today. You know, a lot of people in Israel failed to make it to the promised land because they weren't willing because they were willing to settle for the rest of being slaves in Egypt. What things in your life are you settling for and saying, well, this is good enough rest for me, when it's really just making you a slave? And then a lot of them didn't enter God's rest, didn't enter the promised land because they weren't willing to struggle through that wilderness and deal with those. Instead, they complained and whined and tried to quit. We've got it upside down and backwards, and we can't see it. We're trying to make this life about rest, and it's not. This life is about growing. And growing through suffering and trouble, that's what it's about, not about resting. So how do we grow? I mean, if day seven's out there, God's got it for us. He wants us to have it. He wants us to even taste it here and now. It's better than anything we can imagine. So how do I go out of this day one through six existence where I'm still in the chaos and the muck and the mire? What do I do? Well, come on, what's the Sunday school answer? Do what Jesus did, right? Well, yeah, right. Do what Jesus did. But that's not as obvious as you probably feel like it is. Because what Hebrews says next might shock you. Go to Hebrews chapter 5, verses 7 through 10. In Hebrews 5, starting in verse 7, it says, "During the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. And he was heard because of his reverent submission. Son of God though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered. And once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him." Does it shock you to think that Jesus learned obedience during this life? That Jesus grew during this life? Even though he was the Son of God, Jesus used this life for growing, not for resting. Jesus learned obedience the same way we all do. He wasn't exempt from it. He learned obedience to God the same way we all do, through suffering. And you may be wondering, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that Jesus misbehaved and did things wrong, and so they had to, you know, got to set him straight and say, "Stop doing that, Jesus," and, you know, hit him with a wooden spoon? No, that's not the picture. It's not that Jesus was disobedient and badly behaved and needed to learn obedience that way. Think of what Hebrews is saying this way. Think of it this way. As the Son of God, obedience was never an issue for Jesus. But once Jesus humbled himself and became like us, obedience immediately became an issue. Now, suddenly, living as one of us, being fully God but also fully man, Jesus understood, the same way we do, the difficulty of obedience. And he suffered through the experience of the human condition and learned the lessons of obedience in every one of those temptations, in every one of those things he suffered. He obeyed God and learned what it takes to obey God and become like him. And in that process, Jesus prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed more than you ever have. And we're not the Son of God. And he cried out to God to rescue him. Jesus knows how hard it is to obey and to learn obedience through suffering. He knows. Jesus used a word picture for his life. The word is baptism, but the picture behind that word is it's like a cloth being dipped into dye and colored. And Jesus talked about his life that way. You dip the cloth into dye, and the cloth soaks up that coloring and that liquid into all of its fibers, soaking it all up. And Jesus said his life was like that. He was dipped into this life with all of its sin and suffering, and he soaked it all up with us, as one of us. Jesus identified with us to the point of suffering the agony of shame and death as though he were a sinner just like us, even though he never disobeyed the way we do. You remember at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, he went to John the Baptist to be baptized. And John the Baptist says to him, "No, what are you doing here? You've done nothing wrong. There's no reason to baptize you. There's no sin to clean you from. You should baptize me, Jesus." And Jesus says, "No, no, no. You're going to baptize me because I am intent on doing this for them. I am intent on identifying with these people, with my people, all the way, and experiencing it all the way. I am intent on becoming like them and suffering as one of them so I can save them and become the source of salvation for them." That's what Jesus was doing. He was going through the day 1 through 6 to show us the way into day 7. And right after Jesus went through that baptism and showed how serious he was, he's going to identify with us all the way to the point of dying as a sinner, even though he wasn't. You know what he did next? Went off by himself into the wilderness for 40 days, didn't eat, and was tempted by the devil. Do you remember that story? Have you seen that story before? Go back to and read it. They were all these temptations that it goes through. Do you remember what they were about? Remember what the devil was trying to do to Jesus there? He was trying to convince Jesus to rest here and now instead of suffering. Let me paraphrase the temptation story for you. "Jesus, don't go hungry. Come on. You're the Son of God. Use your power to feed yourself. Why should you suffer going through hunger?" And Jesus says back to him, I am learning obedience. I'm learning how to live on the wisdom that comes from God and not just bread. He says, okay, Jesus, please. You're the Son of God. Use your position to protect yourself from this pain and suffering. There is no reason why your feet should be hurting this way right now. There's no reason you should cut yourself. Come on, the Bible says somewhere that the angels will protect you and they'll just swoop down. You don't even have to stub your toes. So come on, Jesus. You know, take it easy here. And Jesus says, no, I am learning not to grumble and complain about suffering, but instead to learn to go through it. I'm learning about the way through suffering. Then he says, Jesus, come on, the quickest way, if you want power in this world, the quickest way to power in this world is through me. You don't have to suffer for it. Just give yourself to me. I'll give you what you want, and you won't have to go through suffering. You won't have to go through any of that stuff. Just, you know, trust me. And Jesus says, look, I am learning to reject the lure of this world and grow through this suffering because on the other end of it is an eternal rest that is so much infinitely better than anything you have to offer me. So no, get away from me. Jesus grew through every one of those temptations, not by failing and then figuring it out, but by going through them, he was showing that he was learning and training in obedience. Jesus grew and grew up to the point where he showed himself complete, completely God, but completely us. Completely perfect. So in that sense, Jesus used this life for growing. He grew in obedience all the way to completion and demonstrated himself to be holy and perfect. And when he did that, God picked him up, sat him down next to him to rule and reign with him. And Jesus entered that day 7. How can you and I do that? How can you and I enter that day 7 rest? Well, it can't be some other way than the way Jesus did it, can it? It's got to be through the path that Jesus blazed for us. He's the only way through it. It's about rolling on your belly until you learn how to crawl. And it's about crawling until you learn how to toddle. And then it's about taking all those falls that you're going to have to take as you continue to push until you finally learn how to walk. And then it's going to have to deal with the stumbles and the trips until you finally learn how to run. This is what life is. Life is for growing, not for just sitting on your rump and letting mommy and daddy feed you and change you. This life is for growing. And if Jesus used this life for growing, then that means there's no way I can escape that. I need to grow through this life, not avoid it. I went to the gym. I've been honest with me and my struggles here, so I went to the gym this week, met with my trainer for the first time, and I thought, this is cool. I'll get to go to the gym, and you know, we'll go to the bench, and I'll get to do some bench presses. I can show off with that. You know, maybe we'll do some curls, and I can show off with that. Look, I can do it this way. Instead, she had me stand on a pad on one foot because I couldn't. Because I don't have balance. And then, okay, switch to the other foot. And that one's better because this one I've injured too many times to count. And then it's okay, now stand on that pad and just now lean and touch that cone. And I'm like, I can't. And then it's okay, sit on this ball and try and pull it. She did all these things that exposed how weak and frail and unbalanced I am. And it was embarrassing and good. Because now I know. Now I know what I need to go work on. Now I know what I need to do. Now I know where I need to grow. If I don't, I'm going to keep getting harder and drier and more out of balance and more unhealthy. Same is true for our souls. And yet, when's the last time you stepped into the gym with Jesus and let him train you? Or embraced suffering as Jesus, okay, I want to learn obedience through this. Whatever it is, some of our suffering is major. Most of the stuff I get upset about is minor. Instead of getting upset, Jesus, what can you teach me about this? I was talking to somebody yesterday who was talking about learning the lesson of instead of getting angry and screaming in traffic, they just asked Jesus, what are you showing me? What are you telling me? Maybe you want me to just pause for a minute and you got something to tell me. Maybe you're protecting me from something that could have happened. Whatever it is, I'm not going to use this moment to grumble and complain. I'm going to use this moment to train and let you shape me. Let you make me. And you can do that with traffic and you can do that with cancer. We've seen people over and over in our church do that very thing. And let it, even the harshest things of life, train them to become more and more godly and more beautiful. Just this past week was the 2-year anniversary of my friend Matt's death. And I wasn't planning to talk about this, but it just comes up because I was reminded, I was reading some of the things he had written during that last month of his life. He died to cancer. And they were all the most encouraging things I've ever heard about trust in God and faith and what God was doing in his life and how he just kept leading his church all the way to the point where he just stopped and entered God's rest. Whatever it is that comes our way, it's an opportunity to train. So who is training you spiritually is my question to you today. How are you training spiritually? Because without that, if we're just contenting ourselves to rest here and now, then we get hard and we won't enter that day 7 rest God has for us. Who's training you? And I want to challenge you this year, the way God's been challenging me, not just physically, but spiritually, to grow, to embrace this idea that this life is not for resting, even though God does give us this gift of Sabbath to taste rest. That doesn't mean you can never stop. Please don't mishear me on that. But overall, this life is not about creating comfort for myself. It's about learning and growing and striving for that rest God has for us. So here are some ways, some things that we're trying to do to help each other achieve this and some things that you can do right now and begin to do to begin to help train yourself to grow in Christ. The first one is this, celebrate Sabbath. Start enjoying Sabbath as a day to remind yourself of day 7 and what God has for us. And if you're thinking, I just can't, then I'm going to tell you right now, it's only a slave who says they can't. If you say you can't, that means you're answering to someone other than God who has already said you can, if you trust me. So if you're saying, I can't, this, well then there's someone else running your life, right? God has given us this gift of Sabbath. And look, you know, it can look different in different ways. For me, Sabbath is Thursdays, not today. And I have to learn on Thursdays, and I'm learning how to do this. Please, I am not good at this yet. I'm learning to stop, you know, looking at it as a day to run my errands and do all the things Christina has left for me to do because that's one of the rules of a good relationship. But instead, this is going to be a day of rest and all that other stuff, I'm going to do it the other 6 days because God's given me this day as a gift to taste and remember how awesome he is and what he's given me and to celebrate the people he's put in my life. That's why we gather here on Sundays. That's why it's so important to be here because we get to be with each other and celebrate this the gift. Come on, look around this room at all these different people. You would never know these people if it weren't for church. Come on, you'd still be stuck with the same people, the 5, 6, 7 people that you know in your life. But this gives us this opportunity to have relationship. That's what this day is for. That's what this gift God has given us. So one, start celebrating Sabbath as a gift from God. Two, take a rest inventory, an inventory of the ways that you are finding rest right now. Look at each of the different things you're running to for rest and ask yourself, is this reminding me of God's rest or is this blinding me to it and turning it upside down and inside out and backwards? You know, for instance, if maybe resting for you right now is getting drunk with friends on Friday night. Maybe it's spending a day just vegging out on your sofa and watching Netflix. Maybe it's pornography. Maybe that's become your rest. Maybe it's overindulging in food. For me, food had become my rest. And it probably still is in some ways. A place where I could just, this feels good. Right? And I'm learning how to say, whoa, wait a minute. No, that's not leading me to God. That's actually making it harder for me. God has a rest for me that's better. I want an inventory of the things I look to for rest. And if they're not nurturing God's spirit in me so that I grow, then they're not really rest. They're cheap substitutes. They're halfway up the mountain pretending I'm content with this view of the back of some trees when really I know there's something better and I'm going to stop lying to myself. I want that, not this. I want that. So take an inventory of all the ways that you're finding rest in your life. And you know what? Find a friend and talk to them about it. And say, is this a good way of rest? What do you think? And maybe some of them are wonderful, but you just haven't, like taking a walk out in the woods, fine. But are you using it to draw you closer to God? Spending your day with family, that's beautiful, that's wonderful. Are you using that to remind you and to draw you closer to God? Or are you just using it to make fun of each other all day long? You take an inventory of your rest. Third thing, these are some things that God's put on my heart. I've started to work on this past year, and we're working on more and more this year. One is this discipleship triads. And we're looking to build a couple of these and get them going. These are unique relationships where you say, I am committed to growing to become more like Jesus. And I need a couple people in my life who are going to help me do this. And we're going to help each other do this. And we are going to intentionally spend time training, getting together every week, praying for each other, talking about God, looking at God's word and helping ourselves grow. We're trying to build this up and we're trying to launch this. And one thing you can do if you're interested in something like that, I wish I had had something like that when I was a kid. I never did. Never had anything like that. But real growth will happen in a situation like that. If you're interested in that, you can just take out the app right now. If you're already there, you can go to the main page and go to the Connect thing. It's the two fingers touching a light bulb and lighting it up. And there's a form in there to say, I'm interested in a discipleship triad. And just let me know, and then I'll talk to you more about it and let you know as we try and grow this. You know, there's very limited space right now. So for now, we're going to try and build this. My goal, my hope is in a few years to have like a billion of these things running. Let it be like the DNA of our church. Next thing you could do, if discipleship triad isn't the kind of thing that works for you, is join a small group. Join a life group. We've got a couple groups that are new groups that are going to be launching and rebooting some groups. Join a small group of people who get together regularly to pray for each other, look at God's word, talk about what we talk about here on Sundays, and let it sink in deeper to your life. That's a place to train and learn to be more like God. Jump into a small group. And again, you can do the same thing in the app. You can sign up there, or you can grab a card in the back of the chair in front of you and just fill that out, give it to an usher, drop it off at the Welcome Center, or just hand it to me. What are you going to do? What are you going to do to train? And then the last thing, we're going to launch next week. Toby's going to be preaching and sharing more about connection of spiritual growth with physical health as well. And then after that, a couple weeks, we're going to launch into a series on spiritual exercises, things that we can do to grow. So be here for those. Take notes for those. And each week as we talk about one, put it into practice that week and let this become a gym, right? For training each other up to follow Christ and become more like him. I'm going to ask the worship team to come. Listen to me. It does not matter where you are starting from. It does not matter what condition you are in, what condition your soul is in. I don't care if you're a baby Christian and you don't know anything, or you're a mature Christian and you're still drinking on a bottle. Whatever condition you're in, listen. There are all kinds of reasons why we get slowed down and tripped up and fall behind. But listen to what it says at the end of Hebrews chapter 4. About what Jesus is for us. It says, therefore, since we have a great high priest who ascended into heaven, day 7, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to this faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, the same way we are, but he didn't sin. So, here's what you and I can do. Would you stand with me? Then together with me. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Wherever you are today, Jesus isn't looking to shame you or embarrass you. He's looking to grow you from where you are today to where you next need to be. Whatever that next step is, that's what he wants for your life. He understands how hard it is. He understands completely. In fact, he probably understands it even better than you do. Because for him, that step into suffering was so much greater than you or me. He understands. And what he's done is he's won for you and for me mercy and grace. So when we approach his throne, we don't get this, oh my goodness, look how out of shape you are spiritually. No, we get mercy and grace. And he takes us by the hand and he begins to train us and show us, here's how you can grow. Here's what needs to change. Here's some strength to help you do that. That's what Jesus wants to do in our lives. Coming to this altar is a way of coming to God's throne. Stepping out of our pews and stepping up to this place is a way of kind of physically saying, Jesus, I want to approach your throne boldly to get this mercy and grace that I need to get me moving and growing. I come boldly, not like because I've done anything, but boldly because of what you've done, Jesus. And this morning, coming to this altar right now is a way of saying, Jesus, this is what I want. I want to drive to know you. I want to become like you and not settle for living in this chaos. I want to press on. And if you want to grow this year, what I'm going to ask you to do right now is step out of your seat, step out of the comfortable chairs that we've been sitting in, and just come gather around this front right now. If you want to grow this year, say, God, I am coming to your throne. I need your grace and mercy. You don't have to do anything to earn it. You can approach God because of what Jesus did. And you can come boldly and confidently saying, knowing he broke every chain that's got you held back, every chain.